A new year is full of surprises, but one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services. So when postage goes up, your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com is like your own personal post office, wherever you are. You can even take care of orders on the go with the mobile app. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Schedule package pickups, automatically find the cheapest and fastest shipping options, and seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. There's even a supply store where you can stock up on mailing supplies, labels, even printers. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. All you need is a computer or phone and printer. Take a chunk out of your mailing and shipping costs this year with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.
What can we take from this performance?
Keep up to date with the latest WSL action and the biggest interviews.
How much she enjoyed that goal, a little bit too much in terms of... I wasn't a big fan of the Ronaldo celebration.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Now, delighted to say that Keith Barry is with us with thanks to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And 2021 has been a challenging year for the Make-A-Wish charity due to the ongoing impact of COVID-19. Despite the restrictions and the lockdowns, Make-A-Wish is on target to grant 100 wishes this year. However, there are over 200 children on the list waiting for their wish to be granted, and the charity needs the public's help. These children need that sprinkle of festive magic that only Make-A-Wish can provide now more than ever. They need the hope, the strength and the all-important smile that a wish granted can bring, not only for the child but the entire family. And you can make that happen by making a donation at makeawish.ie/donate. Keith Barry, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, how are you?
Yeah, very well. I mean, I presume you echo this. I mean, this is a charity that you've been working with and something that means an awful lot to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I've been working with Make-A-Wish for a couple of years now as their head of magic for the kids. And I think it's so important, especially at this time of year where there is magic all around us, that we can make some of these kids' wishes come true. You know, I've got kids myself. Over the years, they've had their own issues in and out of hospital. Luckily, they've kind of gotten through their own issues. But there are so many kids out there who are seriously ill and they need the public support, you know, because... You know, unfortunately, some of these kids may not see another Christmas. Other kids may be seriously, seriously ill. And I suppose from my perspective, the very least we can do is just, you know, try and help them have a magical Christmas. And that's what this is about. That's what the campaign is about. That's why I'm here. And look, you know, I've put my money where my mouth is. I've donated myself to Make-A-Wish over the past 18 months as well. So I just hope if the public even have a small amount of money that they can donate to help these kids, you know.
What sort of... experiences does that give you, being head of magic for a charity like this? Like, is it in a strange way an almost fulfilling thing, or how would you explain what you get out of that yourself?
Yeah, for me, look, it's much like any of the other charity work that I've done. It really is just to fill my own soul with magic. You know, any charity work like this that I do, especially for Make-A-Wish, like, you know, I just do it for that sole reason. And there is no other reason, I suppose, really. It's, you know, for me as a magician, my job is to bring adults back into that world where anything and everything can happen, and bring adults back into that childlike sense of wonder when I'm doing a theatrical performance. But I think sometimes we forget that, you know, kids in general have their own problems sometimes. And I'm not just talking about just, you know, health problems, just mental problems and things like that. And I think it can just be so difficult, especially for, you know, seriously ill kids to have fun in their lives again. And their parents, you know, obviously doing everything that they can, you know, to make these every day, I suppose, for these children a magical day. But, you know, I think these kids have wishes. They have wishes that they want granted, and you know, some of these wishes can cost a small amount of money. Other wishes might cost quite a considerable amount of money, and the only way that, you know, these wishes can be facilitated is with the public support. You know,
for sure. One of the interesting crossovers this morning, Keith, is between you and the world of sport, and I think there's still a lot of people out there who aren't quite aware of the amount of work that you've done with sports people. So, when did this start from your perspective, actually getting involved in elite sport?
Yeah, so I've been a mind coach, a hypnotherapist, and an executive coach for, believe it or not, close to 20 years now, but I've just always done it very quietly behind the scenes. And I've worked a lot with athletes, specifically, I would say, in the past kind of 12 years or so. So look, I've been in out of the IRFU camp quite a number of times, and I've worked with a lot of players actually over the years. And in my world, confidentiality is key. So, you know, a lot of these players just, for whatever reason, they may not want the public to know that they're working with me. But like some players have come out and talked about the work that I've done with them. So obviously, Keith Earls has spoken recently about the work that I've done with him. Rory Best, I worked with Rory quite a bit in the kind of the last 2 years of his career. And then aside from them, you know, I've worked with golfers, tennis players, you know, soccer players, a whole gamut, really, of elite athletes. And my job, my function, my role is to teach them how to hack their subconscious brains and help them achieve peak performance, you know?
The obvious question then is, how do you do that? But I presume that just opens a Pandora's box of potential talking points. Could we then just focus in on say, Keith Earls, for example, because he's been really open with his experiences. His book is an absolutely phenomenal read, and as have all the interviews he's done, they've all been brilliant to listen to. So what sort of work did you do specifically with Keith Earls throughout his career?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've got a Keith book next to my bed at the moment, so I'm reading it myself. Of course, I did skip to the chapter where I knew he probably talked about me. So it's about three or four pages where he talks about the work that I did with him, you know. And I suppose when I started working with Keith, really, I always start with the one question that I need to start with everybody. I'm like, okay, so why is it that you're playing rugby? Like, just what's the specific why? And I always eliminate the obvious answer, which is like, oh, I just have a passion for the sport. But you have to really, I suppose, dig deep and get people to put deep, meaningful thought into their own purpose, into their why. Because once you know your why, then, you know, the pathway to success and the hacking of the subconscious mind is the easier part. The hard part is trying to get people to figure out what their why is. And Keith had a number of different whys, which was great. It took us a while to get those out of him. But one of his purposes at that moment in time was not only to start playing better, because believe it or not, there was a moment in time when he just wasn't playing great. He'll openly admit that, and some people forget that. So he wanted to play better, but then more importantly, he wanted to win Players Player of the Year. So that's what we really zoned in on. And then with Keith, my job again is to allow him to hack his own subconscious brain. So I'm the facilitator, if you like. I never take credit for this stuff. For me, I am, I suppose, adept at the subconscious mind. I always avoid the word expert, but I know a lot about the subconscious mind. And the problem is most people don't. And that's where your anxieties lie. That's where your stresses lie. But it's also where, you know, we've got 86 billion neurons in our brain and we're constantly creating new neural pathways every single day. And that comes from what you focus upon. So on a subconscious level, I had to get him to focus upon, like, I know he spoke about this himself, you know, moments in matches where perhaps in the past he might drop a ball, miss a tackle, whatever it was, and that would really adversely affect the rest of his game on the pitch in that moment from that one missed tackle or one drop ball. So my job was actually to help him, like, this is one of my jobs, we did a lot more as well, but just to give you an example, was the moment he dropped the ball or to or made a missed tackle was to reset subconsciously in the moment and actually use that as inspiration to play better for the rest of the match. And it worked. You know, a year later he won Players Player of the Year. I remember a couple of years ago I worked with a bodybuilder, Hugh Donovan was his name. And he came in to me and he'd about 5 weeks left to the NABBA All-Ireland Bodybuilding Championships. And he'd never won it or anything. So I worked with him and within 4 or 5 weeks, he got into such a physical shape and mental shape that not only did he win his category, he won the whole thing outright. And then I've had, you know, elite athletes that have actually been disqualified from races because they were racing too fast, which I didn't even know was a thing, by the way. If I'd known that, I could have preempted it. But it turns out you probably know more about this stuff than I. But it was in a cycling race and he got within, I don't know, a wheel or two wheels of the racer in front of him and he was sin-binned for, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes or something. But that was a big problem because then he ended up not qualifying, you know. But if I'd known that, I could preempt it because I'm a big fan of preempting obstacles. I think our government could do a little bit of that at this moment of time, you know.
Can I just ask you, is what you're doing with the sports people the diametric opposite of what you do with people in the audience, where you're trying to get them to the audience. You want them to immediately change their neural pathways. You're trying to create new neural pathways so they believe that they're experiencing something which they're not. Whereas with the sports people, what you're doing is you might be experiencing this thing and you need to stop experiencing it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, for me, they're complete polar opposites. I think sometimes people get confused by my brand, and I'm very clear on what my brand is. Like, I have two different brands. So brand A is the entertainer, the person on stage who loves that, just have fun with an audience, transform them into a childlike sense of wonder. When I bring people on stage, sometimes if I hypnotize them, they'll do things they wouldn't ordinarily do. But there's a lot to that. So that type of hypnosis, you know, it involves the peer pressure of the audience. It involves people on stage willingly wanting to behave in a certain way and all that kind of funky stuff. But then the polar opposite of that is the mind coach, the executive coach, where I'm very serious about what I do. And in that role, I have to really actually genuinely hack deep into the subconscious mind. And, you know, autogenics is a thing that I'm a big fan of, which is basically where, as I mentioned, I see myself as the facilitator and really allowing people. Autogenics is basically the idea or concept that people are capable of hacking their own subconscious minds. But in that role, I'm actually trying to create sustainable, permanent change. And that's the major difference that I see between the two different brands. And I love doing both. I don't think I'll ever choose one over the other, to be honest. I think I'll always do both. Like right now, if I look at the kind of the executive coaching and the work that I do with athletes, it's pretty much split 50-50. So I do a lot with business people as well, but really high performing business people. But with them, like, for example, I could be working with them one day, teaching them how to read people's micro expressions and body language and how to find out if somebody's lying to them or not. And then a couple hours later, I could be helping a golfer on a swing or her swing, you know?
It's a bit wild. You mentioned there the government. As a performer, as somebody who, you know, when you're not doing the coaching stuff, what has the last 18 months actually been like for you?
Yeah, look, it's been terrible, really, for everybody, for every performer, you know, because I don't think that the government truly understand that it's in our DNA to be on a stage, especially the junkie road rats, as I would call us. Like, there's a lot of us around that have been around for 20 years plus. So I think if I was starting out, it would be difficult, but it wouldn't be as difficult as if right now there's hundreds, if not thousands of performers all around Ireland who've been on the road for 20 years. We don't know anything else. And it's in our DNA to be on a stage, and we need to be on a stage. It's not about money. We need to be on a stage. Like, I've been on a stage since I'm 14, pretty much every single week since I'm 14 in some capacity. So to have not been on a stage for whatever it is, 20 months now, it can be very detrimental to your mental health. Now, with that being said, I've got a lot of tools, techniques, and strategies to make sure that I'm okay. But I look at, you know, other bands, other musicians, and I can see the way it's really adversely affecting their mindset and their behavior. So look, it's just terrible. And I just, for me, you know, look, I'm very careful not to overly criticize people sometimes, but I'll go back to it. I always preempt obstacles. So I'm somewhat bewildered about how the government could come out and say, well, we don't know what's around the corner with this whole pandemic. You know, it keeps giving us twists and turns and all the rest of it. And I'm looking at that going, well, I can tell you, but I don't need to be a mentalist to tell you. Anybody on the street can tell you what's coming around the corner. Preempt that there's going to be another strain of this. Preempt that there could be another pandemic on top of this one. And if you preempt and plan for that, then ultimately you'd be prepared instead of putting us into continuous cycles of semi-lockdowns, you know, opening theatres, closing theatres, and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, once you have those obstacles preempted, then you can plan strategies for them. Like, I saw last night that, you know, Micheál Martin mentioned something like that. He doesn't want theatres to be closed and he's going to look at some kind of subsidy. It's too late. Like, everybody around Ireland has already changed their dates and they're looking for dates and venues, and venues are booked out for 2 years. So if you're trying to shift a gig or a tour or whatever it is, you know, you might not be able to because venues are just not available right now. So it's a lot more complex than I think people understand. It's a lot more complex, certainly, than the government is making it out to be as well, you know.
You mentioned the struggles that people have gone through over the last little while. Is there any techniques that you've gone to yourself personally more than any others over the course of the last 2 years?
Yeah, well, I put all of these different techniques and strategies into a book, actually. So the book is out just 3 weeks now. It's called Brain Hacks. And in the book, I've packed the book with brain hacks in order to effectively change your subconscious mind. So, you know, in the book, though, the number one thing that I always come back to is creative visualization. So that's something that I do on a daily basis myself, where over the corner of the room over here, I've got a chair. I sit down, I stick a blindfold on, I put what's called binaural beats on. So people can just find that on YouTube, just stick in binaural beats. Basically, that allows you to enter into an alpha brainwave state, which is the sweet spot that you need to be in order to effectively creatively visualize. So if people want to know about this stuff, it's very simple. You just take 15 minutes out of your day, commit that 15 minutes. So you got to do it every single day. It's like riding a bicycle. You got to learn how to do it. You're not going to, there's no magic wand with this stuff. You're not going to have an effective change just instantly. But if you do it daily, you'll slowly start to see some amazing changes over time. So you take 5 minutes to relax your physical body. Now, I generally do that by visualizing a purple light entering into my feet and then up through my ankles and my shins. And you visualize that purple light going into every spot in your body. And then after that, the next 5 minutes, I practice my own breathing technique, which is quite simple. It's just the 6-3-6 technique. So you inhale for 6 seconds, hold for 3 seconds, exhale for 6. Inhale for 6. Hold for 3, exhale for 6. And by doing that, you'll start to slowly enter into that alpha brainwave state. You're slowing down your autonomic nervous system. You're slowing down your limbic system. And then you visualize yourself just in the cinema or movie theater and visualize a giant screen in front of you. And that's where you future project your goals, your dreams, your targets, whatever it is that you want to effectively change during that moment in time. So what will happen here is when you're finished that session, that 15-minute session, when you're going about your day, your subconscious mind will be working in overdrive behind the scenes in order to achieve that goal, that dream, or that target. Now, of course, that can only happen with effective actions. So I'm very clear about that. So you got to take the actions necessary in order to achieve that goal, that dream, or that target. But the good news is by doing that visualization, it'll make the actions necessary all the much easier to do. So that moment when you wake up out of bed on a stormy day like today and you think you're going to skip the gym, just naturally, you'll actually go to the gym or do whatever it is that you need to do because your subconscious mind is constantly working over in overdrive in order to motivate you. And I always say to people, if you want to try this, do it for 21 days, because that is, scientifically speaking, how long it takes to attain a habit. If you do that for 21 days, you will see effective change in your life, but you can't not see it if you do it correctly. So that'd be my number one top for people, is just to put aside 50 minutes out of every day to creatively visualize, you know?
Right. Can I ask you, when you're tapping into the subconscious mind of sports people in particular, are there any common themes after they do techniques like the one you just illustrated, for example, that tend to come to fruition? Is there a commonality between all these elite sports people that you tend to find?
Well, weirdly enough, the one commonality that I found is they all have the imposter syndrome. So if you talk to these people behind the scenes and you're just talking one-to-one with them, they all suffer from confidence issues. So they all feel like that they're an imposter in the position that they're in, and that, you know, at any given moment in time that they might be caught out. So it's fascinating to me that all these elite athletes, the majority of them certainly, that they suffer from the imposter syndrome. And I think if you think about it, most people suffer from the imposter syndrome at some moment in their life. So you may not suffer from it daily, but it comes in and out of your life. But I find that elite sports people, they suffer with the imposter syndrome more than most. And then I suppose secondary to that, I'm quite surprised really at, you know, not just any one person, but nearly all of the elite sports people that I've dealt with, until they've come to me, they actually haven't really studied the subconscious brain at all, which is really fascinating to me because, you know, if you think about it, when you're in a high-performing environment, most of the decisions that you make, either on a pitch, on a field, in a swimming pool, wherever it might be, they're subconscious decisions because they happen so quickly, they're not consciously aware of what they're doing. So therefore, if they are subconscious decisions, which they are, then surely they should have learned at some stage over their career about the subconscious brain. And I think that just comes back to their training habits and whoever their coaches are. And I think coaches, especially in the modern day, certainly need to go to sports psychologists, you know, whether it's somebody like me who's a motivational coach and a mindset coach, they need to really get a grasping and an understanding of the subconscious brain. And any teams that I see, even on soccer or just watching that I'm not necessarily involved with, hurling, you know, it's fascinating to me that when I'm looking at a team or whatever, that I can already tell, oh my God, they know nothing about the mind. And if they're losing or on a losing streak, I always look at the way that the coach or the captain speaks after the game. And I'm very fascinated by all of that, even the body language of the captain or the coach after a loss, you know.
What are you looking for in those moments?
Well, I'm looking at thousands of different things, but I'm looking at, for example, micro expressions. I'm looking for one-sided shoulder shrugs. I'm looking for asymmetrical lip movements. I'm looking at the carotid artery in the neck. I'm looking at body language. So to give you an example, like an asymmetrical shoulder shrug when somebody is talking means that they don't inherit. And now, look, I'll presuppose this by saying you have to have a baseline to go by. Mm. So what I mean by that is I need to understand what that person normally looks, acts and speaks like in advance. So I'll have to have some kind of a baseline of this person on a normal day, where I know what they normally would talk about and look like and all the rest of it when they're just on a, you know, during a very comfortable day. So I need to know the baseline first. But then after that, I'm looking for changes in their physiology when they're talking about a specific point. So if I see a change in their physiology that they don't ordinarily have, for example, a one-sided shoulder shrug. Now I'm doing it there, but you can't see it because you're untrained and I have to see it. But if I exaggerate it, that's what it looks like. But it isn't that. It isn't what I'm doing now. I'm exaggerating that. It's literally that. I'm doing it now, right? And they're very hard to see because you can see how small that movement is in my shoulder. But when I see that, I know that the fight or flight mechanism has kicked into that person. And I know that they probably don't believe what it is that they're saying. So if they say, for example, oh, the team did their very best on the day and I see a one-sided shoulder shrug, I know that the coach, the captain, whoever it is that's talking at that moment of time, they don't believe that. They don't actually believe that their team did their best on the day. If I see a one-sided shoulder shrug when I hear a coach saying, well, you know, on our good day, there's a chance that we might be able to beat the other team, wherever the other team might be, and I see one side of shoulder shrug or an asymmetrical lip movement, I know that the person actually doesn't probably believe in what they're saying. I also look for nose touches a lot because when somebody's lying or whether their body's under stress, the nose has thousands of blood vessels at the end of it, so the nose engorges with blood and people will get a subconscious tick there and they'll just touch their nose more often than they would. So when I see that, then I know that the person, for some reason, is under stress and they're most likely lying to me. You know, so these are all the different indicators that I'm looking for, but there's thousands of them. They're just kind of three off the top of my head, you know.
I'm going to watch the post-match press conferences in the Champions League tonight in a completely different way after that, Keith.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, I love studying that. Like, in the world I'm in, I more study politicians because like that, you know, that has a direct effect on my own livelihood. But you can do it with coaches as well and with sports people. Like, I'm really fascinated how bad actually a lot of the soccer managers are at their own body language post-match. Like, I can't believe that they haven't trained themselves like robots in it. Like, and I mean, they should be robotic afterwards. They should enter into this mindset of a winning mindset. Like, do you think Usain Bolt or Michael Phelps ever entered a swimming pool or went on a track thinking that they might win or that maybe their next performance might get? No, there was no they were definitive in their mindset. And, you know, it's fascinating to me when you see the body language, the shoulders, all the different indicators to me that says one thing, loser. And that will just resonate through a team. It's infectious, that losing mindset, that negative mindset. My God, it's so negative, a lot of these guys. So they could do well, I think, to study and strategize with somebody like myself or another body language expert in order to understand how effective or how detrimental their own body language can be in that environment, you know?
We need to get you back on, Keith, and go through like classic press conferences and interviews. And
oh yeah,
you know, like what you're saying there. For whatever reason, in my head, I'm like thinking I would love to hear you analyze Rory McIlroy's body language after, because he's so honest, yeah, and he's so out there. It would be just a fascinating study. I should remind everybody watching this morning as well that Keith is with us because 2021 has been a pretty challenging year for the Make-A-Wish charity due to the ongoing impact of the coronavirus. Despite the restrictions and the lockdowns, Make-A-Wish is on target to grant 100 wishes this year. However, there are over 200 children on the list waiting for their wish to be granted, and the charity needs the public's help. These children need that sprinkle of festive magic that only Make-A-Wish can provide now more than ever. They need the hope, the strength and the all-important smile that a wish granted can bring, not only for the child but the entire family. And you can make that happen by making a donation. And to do that, you can go to makeawish.ie/donate. Keith Barry, you've been great with your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. See you soon. Cheers.
Cheers. Keith Barry there on the line, and it's makeawish.ie/donate. Okay, so OTB AM, it is 9:36 by the way, has been brought to you by Gillette. Good mornings. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and
improved razors. You touched your nose, razors.
Did I?
You touched your nose.
I'm
you
very, nose. Everything you said there, I'm like, I do
just
all
as he
this
said,
all the time.
People who touch their nose are lying. You were like, it was involuntary. You kind of reached up and were like, uh-oh.
Oh, God, yeah. Everything you said there, I'm like, I feel so seen right now. Just look at your toes. Don't let anybody read you. That was pretty interesting. I'm not going to lie. I was trying to think through a few sports people, and it's not actually too difficult to actually visualize what he was talking about there. But we might revisit that in a little while.
OTB AM
with Gillette. We don't just play the game; we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.